There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Thursday, and we are at the Mobile Convention Center for the 2024 Business Expo for the Mobile Chamber. Appreciate everybody stopping by and saying hello. People getting FM Talk 106.5 goodies, plus the buckets, the much-coveted FM Talk 106.5 buckets. You got a chance to win one today. Just drop your business card in here, and we'll do that drawing here at the end of the event. And I've got my man Dale Leash we're going to talk to with Landnap in just one second. But I will say, I've looking at your text, a couple of different texts. We talked last hour about that number that Secretary of State Wes Allen came out with, the number of people that are legally here but non-citizens that are registered to vote in federal elections. Pretty shocking on that. And also workforce participation rates and what could be done here locally. I think some interesting ideas on the text line, and we'll get to those as well. Talk about interesting ideas. The crowd goes wild. The man, the myth, my friend, Dale Leash from Landnap, landnapmobile.com. Hey, man.
Hey, are there beer in those buckets?
Well, there could be. Yes, we could serve them up that way. And these are the not like, you know, the beer buckets you get it like at a place. They're those like pails, right? And you can put like five or six. In these buckets, right. The FM Talk 106.5 buckets, you could put the better part of an 18-pack if you packed them carefully in there.
Man.
Yeah,
man, mm-hmm. That's wild. All right,
see,
cool.
So, yeah, I guess you know it's a weird thing that after 30 years in the radio business and you know, premium items from everybody gives away huggers and stickers and pens, and we do all that stuff. But I said, you know what, we ought to give away. Let's give away a bucket. So yeah, we got logoed buckets here, and they're cool. They got the rope handle and a handle on the bottom. They're cool. I know a guy. I'll get you hooked up with one. Okay.
All right. Cool.
All right. Start off with this. Over at landnapmobile.com, story up today. The former Gulf Coast Technology Center commander offered a city job after firing. You had me at the headline here, Dale. What's going on?
Yeah. Talked to Kevin Levy and his attorney Chris Callahan yesterday, and they reiterated a story that has probably made some waves last week as well. That a couple of days after he was let go as commander of the Gulf Coast Technology Center, he was called into a meeting with Chief of Staff James Barber and Mayor Sandy Simpson, and basically offered some sort of, the idea was to offer him some sort of job, you know, so that he could remain in employment at the city. He just, in a statement, the mayor basically said he couldn't remain on as Gulf Coast Technology Center commander because of the report from the special counsel and some of the concerns in there. So they were going to offer him a different job. There was no details given on what kind of job he was going to be offered. Kevin said he wasn't given that information. He said the meeting didn't last long enough for him to have done to have heard what the details were, and so that's kind of where that story starts, right? And I think because we're conflating two things here, I want to kind of set the record
straight.
Okay,
good, because my mind, you know, people's minds jump to something here, so yeah, deconflate.
Well, what are the minds jumping to, and I'll see if I can answer.
Well, I mean, it's the idea that, okay, you're not, we've heard this discussed before. I mean, I know former Chief Prine said, you know, he was being fired, but then at the same time he was being offered to stay
offered
on as
a consultant job.
Right, and you're like, wait, I'm not good enough to.
Right.
keep this job, but you want to retain me as a consultant. And then the flip side of it is, this seems like, I mean, adjacent to that kind of discussion, or am I missing something?
Let me get to the fact of I'm not good enough to be this in this job, but you're offering me another one. That is correct, right? Think about it this way. Like, the city was concerned specifically about the fact that Levy, in the report, is alleged to have lied to investigators about authoring the 321Z insights.
The peer review thing, right?
The peer review study. He authored that, and then they say he tried to pass it off as if the company that was contracted to analyze the ShotSpotter was the one that wrote it. That is what's alleged. His attorney, Chris Callahan, says that at no point did his higher ups in the administration. Did they not know that he wrote the? They're claiming that they always knew that he wrote the report, but you know, we have emails that suggest that, at least in emails to Paul Prine, we have emails to Paul Prine where Levy doesn't necessarily come out and say he wrote the report. So to say that there's a question as to who wrote the report, I think that's a fair assessment. So there's that, and I think some of those concerns related to who authored the report and whether or not he, you know, lied under oath in an investigation were questionable enough for him to not be the commander of the Gulf Coast Technology Center anymore from the city's perspective. So I think that is why they could keep him on in one role, but he couldn't be commander of the Gulf Coast Technology Center.
Maybe I'm too simple, but if you're saying that this thing you did was, I don't know what term they use, but doing something you shouldn't have done, signing, I mean, then why would you then offer him another job? If at the core of this, you made this mistake, you made this choice here to do something that was, I don't know if you use the term illegal or not the rules or whatever, but then you turn around and offer him another job. It just leaves me kind of questioning why you do that.
Right. Oh, I hear you. And I just wanted to, and I don't have an answer for that. I'm not the city. I'm just telling you what they told me in the statement. I would also say that, like, the people are at, there is a sense that the administration somehow, you know, had this report, hired Bill Athenas, that he was hired because of the city. He was hired by the council. It was a council investigation. And if you'll remember, the administration seemed to, you know, be against the hiring of a special counsel, arguing that they had done previous...
They already sent it to the AG's office and all that.
Yeah. You guys remember that discussion. So now that we've heard some arguments in the public and among others that the city hired Athenas. I just want to point out, as a reporter, that is not the case. That was the council. They are technically two separate entities.
I guess you need to say because people hear the city and they think the council as well. But you mean executive branch versus legislative?
Correct. You had the legislative branch investigate the executive branch in this case. Mm-hmm. They are not the same. Now whether or not you want to say that it was all done as sort of a way to find a scapegoat, it's whatever it is. But as far as who hired who, the city council hired Athenas, and not the administration. So I just want to put that out there as well, because that was something that bothered me. Basically there was this secret, kind of the secret meeting, where Levy says that he thought they were going to talk about, like, settlement and compensation, because, you know, this whole thing in the media and him being fired have cost him at least one job already that he could have had after the firing. So you know, he thought maybe they were going to talk to me, compensate me for this whole situation, and instead, he claims that instead they offered him a job and tried to tell him that Callahan was was lying about things, his attorney was. So that's kind of where the disagreement is on the meeting itself.
And so, I always ask these questions. So what's next here?
Well, I mean, Callahan and Levy, I think, are hoping that there's some sort of compensation moving forward. There's some sort of settlement.
But you write something the city stopped negotiating, right, with them? Or
That is what Callahan says. City officials might have a different take on that. I don't know for sure. But according to Callahan, they have stopped communicating with them. And they think that means that they're going to sort of... They're going to sort of find more issues with him moving forward. That the city will come out with more allegations to make him look bad. So maybe they will. Maybe we'll see something. But his attorney said he wouldn't be surprised if that was the case.
Well, the term that we keep hearing people talk about is, I say some people have said this is scapegoating, right? That they're trying to find somebody to be the scapegoat for this. And I guess it, I don't know. I mean, is it, Prine says that, that scapegoating himself and Levy, and it sounds like Levy saying the same thing.
Yeah. And I would have told you at the beginning of all this that Prine and Levy were on opposite, kind of on opposite ends of this. So it's interesting that they are.
It makes me pay attention to it more. It does.
Right.
Right. And I don't know, I'm not sitting here passing judgment what's true and what's not true, but when I see disparate
interests,
it does.
Right.
And so
it's kind of like when AOC and Ted Cruz get together on legislation, you're like, something must really be messed up.
That's right. That's true. Let's pay attention to this one for sure.
Yeah.
Also, if we needed any more drama at the city level, this one you write about, I talked about last week before I left town, and I guess it came up in council meeting this week, the dove hunting and quail hunting inside city limits. Now, the quail thing, if somebody's got some quail inside the city limits, they got a viable covey or two, let me know. I'll bring the dog and we'll show up. But this is like, I in the discussion of this, I remember something from long ago, and I don't know, maybe other people in the audience. There used to be an area behind what's now Heron Lakes and kind of off of 65, I guess south of 90, that they used to dove hunt, even though it was in the city limits back then. A friend of mine's dad had some kind of inside. And they said back then it was 40 acres or something, so they could have dove hunts there. I think they had some fantastic shoots. Now this has come back up because of annexation. Somebody wants, I guess, their dove field got brought into the city, and now there's an ordinance to deal with that?
Yeah, it's an amendment to the ordinance that would, basically the ordinance says, you can't shoot a gun within city limits. That's pretty obvious. People have followed that or not followed that.
Try New Year's. Try New Year's. Listen to it outside. Yeah.
Right. So people have kind of followed that, maybe not followed that as much for years now. But so they amended that ordinance to say no shooting within the city limits unless you have 10 acres or more of land that is 700 feet, at least 700 feet from like a school, a park, a roadway, any sort of thing. So we're talking big open field. But like you can't go out on your back porch and shoot a dove.
No, but not legally.
So,
pelicans
are quiet. Not legally anyway.
Yeah,
right. Not legally. So, and you can only use 7.5 shot.
Yeah. So it's going to be 7.5 or bigger. I know that the way the story is, so 7.5, 8 or 9, I would imagine. They didn't put that in there, but so birdshot, nothing that has any pellets any bigger than 7.5.
Correct. It's got to be birdshot. It's got to be for small birds, basically,
Yeah, so, and those don't carry as far, so people who don't know that stuff, that's what. Now, the interesting thing, too, though, it's like you quote here, and I don't have it right in front of me. Oh, here it is, or maybe you didn't, that one of the citizens here, Sabrina Mass, brought this up, and I wonder about this. It says, everyone has to be treated equal. This should have been discussed before annexation was put on the table. We aren't second-class citizens. In fact, we were here first. So is the argument here that because these areas would be given the right in these bigger fields to hunt doves, then people should be able to be shooting 7.5 or bigger shot in the rest of the city of Mobile? Is that?
I think that's...
Okay.
You could make that argument. I think it's the opposite. I think because other areas aren't allowed to shoot, birds in their backyards...
They shouldn't be.
You kind of flipped it on its head. It's the same thing, but I think it's more along the lines of if we can't do it, they can't do it. You know, and that was, as you know, the issue of fairness came up a lot in the annexation discussion. So I think this mm-hmm. is just another part of that. You can put restrictions on something like this to make it so that it's only. I mean, we have
and you can zone. Yeah, that's what I'm about to say. You can zone. Like, I don't think there's the concrete's real hard under that argument there, because I mean, there's all kind of things in the city that you might be able to do in one area and I can't do in the other.
You can't have a strip mall downtown, but you can on airport. Like, that's
correct.
The same. That's the same thing. You know,
should be dove hunt zoning. Dove zoning.
I mean, that's basically what it is, right?
Yes.
It's basically dove hunt zoning. If you have the right, size property, the right size lot, you could dove hunt on it. It's the same thing with any other zoning that you. So using that argument, like, you'd have to get rid of all zoning in the city, or you'd have to make it all the same. And we know that doesn't work. We have form-based code downtown because everything's closer together, and we have smaller lots, and we have strip malls and stuff. On the other areas of town, because there's more property. It's just the way it works.
Yeah, the precedent has been set. All right. People want to check out the new issue of Lanyap, or check it out like I do online. Give them the directions to do that.
LanyapMobile.com is the website. You know, click on the subscription button. Get a subscription to your house. You know, right through your computer screen. All the breaking news is on the website. Everything we ever do is on the website, so check it out. Check out the purple boxes and newsstands every week for the paper. Thank you.
And there he goes, my man Dale Leash. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. We are at the Mobile Convention Center for the Mobile Chambers Business Expo 2024. Makes sense. It's 2024. It'd be odd if it was a different year. good to see everybody out here, and still time to get in till 3 o'clock. Folks coming in. And by the way, too, if you're just looking for something to, you know, you're out looking for something to do, the food in here, a lot of food vendors, too, and people going by. I'm not going to call Dalton out by name, but going by and grabbing great food samples that are here as well. So come by and see us and go get yourself something to eat. Hey, heads up, too. Fall is, on the calendar, fall comes up sometime in September, right? Fall arrives here, late October, something like that. Another reason to get out and enjoy riding outside, riding bicycles. I've been doing it all summer, but if you wait seasonal, that's fine, too. Clint Jamison has a huge stock right now of the e-bikes. I've been talking about the electric bikes. I've been riding one, I guess, two plus years now. Got me back into riding bicycles here in my 50s. Love my e-bike. I've got a Magnum from Scout. But he has 75 in stock at any point for you to come in and take a test ride on those e-bikes. And there's different, like any kind, like regular non-electric bicycles, same thing. There's e-bikes for on-road. There's hybrids. There's ones that are more for off-road. There's all kind of different configurations. There's the amount of battery power, distance, all those things fit for different people for different reasons. Nice thing is Clint knows this stuff inside and out and can get you on the right bike for you. You can take the test ride on it and see what I've been talking about. And if you're going for a non-e-bike, 400 of the non-electric bikes in stock at any point. So you're getting a bicycle for the kids back to school, getting one for riding around this fall, or like I see so many people with campers, they've got those e-bikes with them too, so they take the camper, they park the camper wherever they're going for the weekend, and they use those e-bikes to get around town. Great selection and great expertise when it comes to regular or e-bikes. It's my friend Clint Jamison. We've been knowing each other. This guy's been riding bikes like he never let up. He's been doing it his whole life, and we've known each other 20 years. So go see him. He's at the corner of Airport and Little Flower in Midtown, kind of right across from Ruth's Chris, adventure-earth.com. That's the website, but best to go see him in person. Adventure Earth Bicycles, everything inside to get you outside. All right, we'll get a few texts here, and then we'll have some time here when we come back from the news to get more. Terry asked, can we bow hunt coyotes in the city? You know, if you don't get caught. That was my question, but I'm not going to drag Dale Leash, who doesn't hunt, into that conversation, because I was going to say, okay, well, if we're doing that, what about, you know, archery equipment for bow hunting for deer and some of the, like, there's a lot to it. I'm not gonna put that on Dale Leash. He's gonna say, what the heck are you talking about? All right, come back, we'll get your text and your calls at 343-0106. It's Midday Mobile. Glad you're here.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. We are on location at the Convention Center for the Mobile Chambers Business Expo. And, get out here and enjoy. It's still open until 3 o'clock. People still coming in, so stop by. Also, there's a lot of FM Talk 106.5 goodies that Dalton and I don't want to load back up. So, you know, you come get those here, too, and then we don't have to load them back in the van. So these are the way that things go. All right, speaking of things going on right now, I got an email from my buddy Forrest at Blue Water Yacht Sales and Service. And, you know, we've been talking about the brokerage services where they are selling, high-end used boats. And I've explained to you why, I think if you've heard in the past, why you should use them to sell your high-end used boat. I had to have a whole conversation with Forrest and said, okay, why am I going to have you do it versus me doing it? And he pointed out that they get you top dollar on the boat, but you don't have to do all the legwork and get the boat sold. But the nice thing is, too, with their brokerage, they get the best in the used boat inventory out there. They got tons of new boats, of course, and they still have that incentive pricing on them. But he sends out email the other day. He said, okay, here's August. It's called August Last Hurrah. So get out on the water in August. Because, you know, this whole idea that after the rodeo, some people are like, oh, the fishing season's over. Gosh, there's so much more warm weather ahead of us. He put this one up this week. Boat of the Week. So here I get this. Hey, Sullivan. Boat of the Week. A 2023 Jupiter 32. This thing is gorgeous. It combines luxury and performance in the ultimate on-water experience. And he said you take advantage of the Yamaha Cruise Through Summer promotion, enjoy extra discounts on Yamaha outboard motors, plus extended warranties, give you extra peace of mind. Now, this boat is the feature, but it's one of many. Yes, 32-foot Jupiter with twin Yamaha F300s on it. And you get a chance to save a lot of money on it and check that boat out. But that's just one of many. And if you do the service work on your own boat, like I've said, or you want them to do the service work, they're a Yamaha 5-star certified mechanic on staff. Plus, they do the work on Mercuries. And if you do the work yourself, Kelsey in the parts department has what you need to do the maintenance on your boat and fix it up. So check them out. Blue Water Yacht Sales in two locations on the East I-65 Beltline and at Orange Beach Marina, online at bluewateryachtsales.net. So check them out. And thanks for teasing me with that, Forrest. I appreciate it. It's a good-looking boat. All right, to the text line at 343-0106. Let's go back to – we're going to do this chronologically. I'll go back in time here and bring it up because I know there's a lot of y'all I have not gotten to yet. The conversation from last hour, too, was the story that Secretary of State Wes Allen had been on the show with me a few weeks ago and said something he was looking into but hadn't gotten the data yet. And then this data is out, and Andrea Ramey had put out the story. The Secretary of State, Wes Allen, said in this investigation that 3,251 people who are here legally in Alabama but not U.S. citizens are registered to vote in Alabama. So once again, that's not illegal, folks. These are people legally in the country, but they're on federal voter rolls. I mean, you got to be a citizen to vote, right? So how did this happen? And he in the story from Andrea, and you can check it out on WPMI or MyNBC15.com, or I'll put it up on the Twitter feed as well. You may say, like, well, how does that happen? And there's some discussion there how these situations happen. But it's significant because remember the SAVE Act legislation that went through the House and got stopped by the Senate, and of course would have been vetoed by President Biden, had questioned how many people that were non-citizens were voting in the United States. And the easy thing people will jump to is, oh, it's illegal folks. But what about legal folks that are here? How are they registered to vote in federal elections? And how did they get there? So I think it obviously is going to bear out a lot more conversation, but Secretary of State Wes Allen had to go through a couple different attempts to get this information, but yeah, it's coming out over 3,000 in the state of Alabama that are registered to vote, even though they're not a citizen. All right, so to your text about that, let's see. Okay, Dirt Digger. Now we know how they stole the election in 2020. We got to the federal government. Maybe. Here's the thing. That's what I talked about with Bradley Byrne in last hour. You know, he's saying, well, it could make a difference. He was making a pragmatic argument. Like, it could make a difference in an election like AL2 or something. Okay. But more importantly to me, I guess, because the idealism of it, right? That it's my beef with the census. When the census factors in non-citizens in an area to apportion representation, it's not the way the founders said it. This is not anything against, I welcome people. You're a legal immigrant here? Cool. Be part of it. That's cool. You just don't get to vote till you're a citizen. Well, the same thing in the census when they apportioned representation for people who aren't citizens. It's like it's completely antithesis to how our system works. All right, this texter says, do legal aliens pay federal income tax? Isn't that taxation without representation if they can't vote in a federal election? It would be if they were a citizen, texter. Right, so they do pay, the way I understand it. You're legal. Yeah, I mean, you're getting the deduction, which is a net benefit, of course, to we the people, somebody who's not a citizen paying in. Maybe they're going to be, maybe they won't, but they're not given the rights of citizens, like representation or taxation with representation, because they're not a citizen. It's a different thing. Buddy said, so if they're unable to vote, how do they get registered and how can they be stopped? Well, that's the good question, Bob, Buddy. That's why we'll get Secretary Wes Allen back on the show to talk about it, because that's my question too. That's delving into the, so how did this happen? How did we get here? What's the hustle, to put it in, Sullivanese? How do you work this? You get a driver's license. They said you can have non-citizen driver's license. Do you get that and then use that to get registered to vote, even though you don't have a social security number? Fair questions. We're going to ask these. Irish Indian says, who lets the non-registered folks vote? I get what you're asking. It would be, this is what we're getting at. How do they go from not being a citizen? I think my best guess here, I have no facts here, is somehow they get a non-citizen driver's license and then nobody checks that there's no social with that. All right, we also talked about unions when Bradley Byrne was on, about his op-ed over Yellowhammer News, talking about the unions are bad for Alabama now compared to where it was 50 years ago. I'm about a 70-30 on that, where I see stories where unions I don't think are helping the workers and are not doing what they were tasked to do with way back then. But in 30% of the time, I'm still somebody who goes, yeah, maybe some collective bargaining is worth doing there for the people. But Earl says, can union leaders keep bosses accountable to the laws they break, like a mayor? I don't know. Tim says, Sean, I'm in the union. Byrne doesn't know anything about unions. Most of the unions are based in Washington, and they back the Democrats, but most of the members I know vote Republican. Well, Tim, so that's the interesting thing. If you read through some of the stories around this, and I think there's actually an addendum there on Yellowhammer, in the South, a lot of people, the union leadership is oriented with the Democrats, but the people vote Republican. But they're using the number of people, and let me see if I can find that paragraph here. They're using the number of people that are represented under that union to move things politically. Even though the individual union member doesn't know what it is, they're using it to move things. Here it is. Here's what it says. It says, for example, it's talking about the UAW. It says, just this past May, 56% of the workers at the Mercedes-Benz facility in Vance voted against joining the UAW. Workers at the facility understood what workers at a Nissan facility in New Jersey recently concluded when they voted to decertify UAW. The union isn't especially interested in helping workers so much as they are interested in capturing more dues-paying members. Now, this is from an op-ed from Bradley Byrne. All right, this is an opinion piece. It says, further, the union has shown a troubling eagerness to infringe on worker freedoms to accomplish its goal. So the UAW poses a clear and present danger to both worker freedoms and Alabama's economic growth. First, it seeks to pressure employers into neutrality agreements, which prohibit employers from sharing information about the union, such as past corruption scandals with employees. When the pressure tactics fail, the union will call on its powerful friends in Washington, D.C., for example. Earlier this year, 33 U.S. senators from states like Michigan, Massachusetts, and Vermont sent a threatening letter to international auto manufacturing executives, strongly implying that they need to accept neutrality agreements to benefit from federal incentives designed to promote EV manufacturing. So in that case, it's not really even the opinion of the individual union members. Now I'm off the op-ed from Bradley Byrne and I'm back talking on my own. It's that they're using this not for the votes in an election, which that's part of it, but it's to be used to move legislation, and knowing that you have these many people that are backing this union, even though the individual members of the union probably have no idea that that's going on. We started talking about what people can make here. The texter said welders can make $30 to $50 an hour. Yeah, and if you didn't hear that, you go back and listen to last hour's podcast. I just asked this question because he, former Congressman Byrne, who is CEO and president of the Mobile Chamber, told a story about a kid who, coming out of high school, was the top of, welder in his class. And he asked him what he was going to do when he graduated, and he said he was going to get a job at Burger King. And they asked him, like, why aren't you going to weld? He said, well, he didn't know what opportunities were there. Now, there's a breakdown there. Now, your kids are knuckleheads, and you got to tell them and tell them and tell them again. We all know that. But at some point, there shouldn't be a reason for a kid that's in a welding class at a high school, let alone the best in that class, to not know that there's a job out there waiting for him to make that kind of money. It just seems preposterous. We talked about the labor participation rate and how it's in Alabama, we're at 52% or was it 56%, meaning that out of people that are in the working age, only that many of them are trying to get a job. Remember, unemployment numbers you see are based on people actively trying to get a job who are not getting a job. The other part is people who are not actively. Why? And we discussed the fact that it may be transportation or child care for people. Adam asked, who is paying for those people to stay at home? Listen, a lot of those situations, they may not be. It may be when some of those situations is stay-at-home moms, right, or stay-at-home dads, and they are doing one income. That's a normal thing. But in some of their questions they've asked people here, they're saying, oh, for ladies, for women more than men, hey, they would go to work if they had some kind of affordable child care. I mean, why would you ask a woman to spend everything she's going to make at her job to put a person in – you know, to put their child in child care. I mean, if it's going to be, even if it's just a little bit of earning over what you would get, why are you going to keep people from staying home with their kids to go make just pennies on the dollar out there? So I get it. How do you incentivize that? T-Bone says 50% of the able-bodied adults in my house are participating in the workforce. So only half. That's more lack of inspiration versus lack of transportation. So that's got to be out there as well. Sure. But I think there's probably, you know, you look at the labor participation rate and you want to say, well, all these people are just lazy, not working. Maybe there's some. Maybe there's a good amount. But there's a lot of other reasons people aren't going to work. If you don't have transportation, don't have child care. So how do we address that? Michael says stay-at-home moms have skyrocketed since COVID, and that's not a bad thing. Why do we want to push moms away from their God-designed role? Well, a lot of families, though, need that extra income. So, and a lot of women probably at a certain point, the kids get old enough, you know, they're not in school full time, but they're trying to, or even child care that's on the after school care, right? And having a situation like that where somebody can, because they can't leave work at 3, maybe more options out there for that. Nick B says, I'm not a fan of unions, but we can't say they don't provide anything positive. They provide apprenticeship training for their members, and typically their employees are very good at what they do. I know this well because I'm a managing partner of a construction staffing firm with branches in 10 states, and when we're lucky enough to hire away a union employee, they are normally better than the guys off the street. So there you go. And we'll continue to read these texts and get more from you at 343-0106. Coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back, Midday Mobile, and we are live at the Convention Center for the Mobile Business Expo. That's going on. And it goes on till 3 o'clock today. I want to read a couple of texts here, and then I'll get my buddy on here and talk about some policy. What we've been talking policy today. I will say this: I got a text here from a friend of mine who says, "I'm listening, Sean. I'm listening to your discussion of the non-citizens being registered to vote." And so this is that story once again that Wes Allen has come out with, Secretary of State, that said 3,251 people in his audit that are now they're legally here. So everybody's like, oh, no, they're legally here, which is cool. Welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. But they're registered to vote in federal elections, but they're not citizens. You know, I'm stuck in old school civics class and go, you know, the people who get to vote are citizens. If you're not a citizen and you're working here, cool. We're glad you're here. You just don't vote because I can't go to another country and vote as a non-citizen. So my buddy said, listen to your discussion about non-citizens being registered to vote. No pushback on the audit the voter rolls. But a few thoughts are the 3,812,913 registered voters in Alabama. The non-citizens registering is a rounding error. Okay. So this, and you're talking about, yeah, okay. So this is what came up last time when they pushed the SAVE Act in the House, when the Republicans did. And they said, well, there's no need to do this. You know, there's not enough people. This doesn't really happen. So, but then why the response from the left so strongly on it? You know, what's the old, if you're taking flak, you're over the target. So maybe there's something to it. But I can also, and this person knows me well enough, that I can also look at it idealistically, which I tend to have a little idealistic, you know, bent to me. If you're not a citizen, you don't get to vote. I don't care if it's one or it's 3,000 or 300,000. I know pragmatically you're talking about how it can sway election, this and that. I'm just still stuck in my, you know, high school, you know, government and economics class and stuck on the fact that you got to be a citizen to vote. So there's that. All right, a couple more texts here. We've got a whole bunch to, if I don't get to these, we'll get to some of these tomorrow. Talking about workforce participation in the state. I just thought it was interesting to hear that conversation from Bradley Byrne that they got the like transportation thing they're trying to address here in the city with getting people who don't have vehicles, because they're asking workforce participation rate is high, way higher here than it is in most states. I mean, way less than most states. In other words, the people who aren't are higher. And why is that? They addressed transportation and then child care. And I just brought up, I said, okay, well, if these bigger businesses that are in our area that are saying, hey, we need, you know, you'll hear these stories, they're lacking 1,200 workers, 1,700 workers. And if some of those are people you address because of vehicles, getting them there, maybe they could subsidize that. And also, even on a child care, where somebody says they can't get to work because mom or dad stays home with the kid. But if they had additional child care, not so hard to get into, something more flexible, they could come to work. Well, if the city and the business thinks it's, and businesses think it's that important, maybe you have them work with government to put something out there so people can come to work. Because it's a, yeah, so, I mean, Supermom says child care is so expensive because of what the daycares have to charge due to the insurance they have to carry. That's what needs to be worked on. That's what prices parents out of daycare being affordable. Yeah, you've got the two things, the affordability and then the availability thing, too. And I just hear from friends of mine that have younger kids who are like, oh, yeah, we're on a wait list to get into daycare. And they're talking about years in this. So seems like that's something we could address out there. All right, I get this man's opinion on it. Wow, I've got yours turned way up high there for some reason, but it works. Don't be so loud, Ryan.
I will try my best not to be so loud.
All right, so it's...
But I think the cure to all of this is if you can ensure that all these workers got a Sean Sullivan-level salary, none of this would be a problem.
That's right. I'm just rolling it. That's why I have this big van to back up and pull the money in it.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, so it from... And it's Oakview Group.
Oakview Group,
marketing
yes,
man extraordinaire, Ryan Foster, Pablo. Yeah, it is kind of something to think about. If we have this low workforce participation rate, so people say, well, the unemployment looks good, but you have this 43% of people are going, nah, yeah, I'm not going to come to work. And yeah, a lot of them may have a recent disability. They decide as a family, one stays home, all those things. But there's some percentage of people that might want to work, but they're not trying to work.
That is true. There's always going to be those. And I do wonder, you know, what this math is factoring in snowbirds, retirees who literally don't need to work. Have they been excluded?
Yeah,
I would hope.
There's a cut. Yeah, it is work age. And I got to go back and look at the parameters.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it. What was 65 back in the old days is not 65 today. People at that age are still working.
That is true. Maybe you have a bunch of Bitcoin, you know, millionaires who have just checked out at 43 or something. I'm not one of them.
Neither am I. That's why we're here talking. Hey, you mentioned this, and this has been a thing you hear at football stadiums, at venues all over the place that are having a clear bag or clear...
Yes. That is what we're doing at the Sanger Theater in Mobile. We're going to a clear bag policy effective September 1st. All public events, you will need a clear bag. And this is mainly directed towards the ladies.
Okay.
That you will have a 12 by 12 by 8 maximum size clear bag.
12 by 12 by 8. Okay.
Yes.
So a gallon Ziploc?
Pretty much, yeah. A little bit bigger than that. But you can also bring a small purse or clutch, no bigger than like 6x8 inside your clear bag. And that can be non-clear. That can be your standard wallet, your purse, you know, but it can't be any bigger than like a 6x8. So they are implementing that policy starting September 1st. And, of course, no backpacks, no camelback things. You know, when you're coming to a concert downtown, you want to make sure you
do. Are you trying to say that somebody might have a camelback full of a delicious mixed drink?
That's entirely possible. And, yes, we can usually find that. But, yes, none of those things are going to be allowed. So, but if people are bringing a diaper bag, they're bringing their kids down to see Disney Junior or something like that, absolutely you can bring your diaper bag. If you have a medical device, that your device comes in a bag, you can bring that. But
starting September 1st.
Yeah, clear bags only when you're coming into shows at the Sanger Theater. And, of course, people can get more info, mobilesanger.com. Get all the info on it there. And if you have any questions, feel free to shoot them at us.
All right, just tell them that Paul Feinbaum's next.
That's it. Paul Feinbaum next on FM Talk 106.5.